It appears that talks to rework the North American Free Trade Agreement will continue into next year. Officials made that announcement after the fourth round of negotiations wrapped up this week. Since President Trump made it clear he wanted to redo NAFTA, we've talked on the show about how the deal has impacted workers and businesses in Arizona and the rest of the country. But today we're going to look at two other groups of people affected by the trade deal, indigenous people in Mexico and Canada. We start south of the border, and I'm joined by Alex Avina, an associate professor of history in the School of Historical, Philosophical, and Religious Studies at ASU. And Alex, is it possible to take sort of a broad look to assess how NAFTA has impacted that population in Mexico?
In general, I think there's been a negative impact. You know, Mexico has had for a long time, since colonial times, it's a very clearly discernible north-south split, right, between northern Mexico and southern Mexico. And most of the indigenous peoples live in the south. And it's a heavily agricultural area, right? So one of the things that NAFTA did was it privatized Mexican land ownership, right? So Mexico had the first great social revolution of 1910. One of the conquests of that revolution was a communal system of land ownership in which peasant communities could petition the government for land. And then that land and other resources would be owned communally. NAFTA took that away. It privatized land once again in Mexico in the early 90s. As a result, a lot of indigenous communities, particularly in the state of Oaxaca and Chiapas, lost that land either because they sold the land, because they lost the land to transnational mining or agricultural companies. And it created a lot of internal displacement, right? So one of the things that NAFTA did was, ironically, stimulate a lot of my internal migration within Mexico, north to south, or south to north. And eventually, many of these people went to the United States as well.
Would this have been the same kind of impact, do you think, had more indigenous people lived in the northern part of the country, closer to the U.S., where some of the other kinds of effects of NAFTA were felt?
That's a really interesting question. I think from its inception or from its idea, I don't think NAFTA was designed to benefit the vast majority of people in Mexico, right? So to that extent, indigenous peoples living in southern agricultural rural Mexico were not ever really going to enjoy any of the benefits from NAFTA. The leader of the indigenous Zapatista movement that emerged in Chiapas in 1994, Subcomandante Marcos, he called NAFTA a death sentence for a lot of these indigenous communities who survived and reproduced themselves socially and culturally through subsistence agriculture, right? And NAFTA is anything but.
What kind of impacts were felt in Mexico because of that internal migration, people moving from the south to the north and sometimes then continuing on to the U.S.?
Oh, it's completely transformed communities. In a place like Oaxaca, Oaxaca's in the south, it's completely transformed the community structure, right? So if you go to rural Oaxaca now, it's not surprising to find a community where it's hard to find a male of working age, right? Hmm. So a lot of these communities will have a lot of elderly males, but it'll be mostly women, right? So it's restructured gender relations in a really interesting way, but it's also severed families.
Is there any optimism in indigenous communities in Mexico that a renegotiated NAFTA might be better for them than the original one?
No. I mean, depending on which community, which indigenous group you're talking to, in general, based on the literature that I've read, I mean, I think the general impression is that NAFTA has had a detrimental impact. I think generally they see NAFTA as a negative thing, and they don't see a renegotiation as improving their lives in the immediate sense.
Are there any provisions, do you think, that could be inserted into a new deal that maybe could, even in some small capacity, be an improvement for some of these communities?
It's really hard for me to say that any improvement would even be included. So for me, it's hard to even think of an improvement policy that could be implemented into NAFTA. But considering the current political climate in both countries, that makes any sort of reform even more unlikely. So it's going to be really interesting to see how this plays out. But if you look at NAFTA in a broad perspective, from the perspective of indigenous peoples, from peasants, from workers, it's been a really bad deal for both Mexican workers since its inception in 1994. And in many ways, it's been a bad deal for American workers in the manufacturing sector as well.
Alex Avina is an associate professor of history in the School of Historical, Philosophical, and Religious Studies at ASU. We'll travel now north of the border. A renegotiated NAFTA could provide an opportunity to address the concerns of Canada's Indigenous people. Joining us on the phone now is Wayne Garnuns-Williams, a Plains Cree Indian and founding president of the Intertribal Trade Organization that's made up of Indigenous and non-Indigenous trade experts. And Wayne, can you give us sort of a brief historical perspective on how NAFTA has impacted Canada's Indigenous population?
Yes, thank you. Generally, first of all, NAFTA, the original free trade agreement between Canada and the United States, and then NAFTA 1, which included Mexico, never included any consultation with Indigenous peoples in any of the three countries. So now we're going into NAFTA 2, where, at least with respect to Canada, and hopefully the United States, and hopefully Mexico, there will be a level of consultation concerning Indigenous peoples. And on top of that, Canada has introduced, as of this round, the proposal for an Indigenous chapter, which I think is an exciting concept, which will provide, I would suggest, a framework agreement so that Indigenous peoples can have their own tribal trade treaties amongst themselves and have economic benefit in their own terms.
Do you see that within the confines of NAFTA, or would that be sort of a separate independent trade deal?
What I would see would be, for example, with respect to the Indigenous chapter that's been proposed by Canada, which we don't know the content of it at this point, but given the fact that there's not enough time to really consult with respect to all requirements, the legal requirements in Canada, concerning the fact that Aboriginal peoples in Canada are protected by our Constitution, Section 35, which protects Aboriginal treaty rights, so there's an obligation on the federal government of Canada to consult. Well, there isn't enough time with respect to these short rounds to provide full and fair consultation. So the concept here would be to, as far as I can see, to provide a framework agreement that protects Indigenous peoples so that they can, later on, for example, an American tribe can negotiate a trade treaty with a Canadian First Nation or a Mexican Indigenous people, and they can then benefit from the protection of having that treaty protected by the Indigenous chapter in NAFTA.
We heard just a few minutes ago from Alex Avina here in at Arizona State about how NAFTA has really caused some internal migration pattern changes in Mexico. Has anything similar happened with Indigenous populations in Canada as a result of NAFTA?
Well, not with respect to NAFTA, because, as I said, Indigenous peoples were never consulted concerning NAFTA. So we were all Indigenous peoples in all three countries were left out of the negotiations. So the first time that we're getting involved here, we've got a bit of catching up to do concerning all the issues that are out there. For example, I use the issue of the concept of traditional Indigenous knowledge that has never been on the table for protection or for the Indigenous peoples to use and to benefit from, and that has been accidentally rolled up into intellectual property through NAFTA. So to have the opportunity to have those discussions, I think, is the beginning steps to protect Indigenous peoples' rights and opportunities.
Are there particular industries or sectors of the economy that some kind of renegotiated NAFTA or maybe a separate sort of side deal with Indigenous peoples of the three North American countries, are there specific industries or sectors that you think this population could really benefit from?
Well, one has to look at the history of Indigenous peoples and the fact that from the very beginning of when Western civilization came to North America, they encountered enormous trade routes, tribal trade routes up and down all of North America. And when you look at the U.S. Constitution, the fact that the Section 1, Article 1, Section 8, Sub 3, says that the federal power for trade and commerce is a federal power, but it's the power to negotiate and to trade with foreign nations, among several states, and with Indian tribes. So the whole concept of having trade is one of those things that you have to look at what their assets are, what they can bring to the table. And in the United States, for example, there are various tribes that are either that have economic opportunity that they're using concerning their own resources and their own capacity, as expressed through, for example, the fact that they have domestic dependent nation status in the United States and can decide their own domestic laws and provide their own self-government. So they are generating business and they are generating wealth. So that to provide this tribal trade opportunity will provide global tribal trade opportunities for Mexico, United States, and Canada.
All right, that's Wayne Garnons-Williams, the founding president of the Intertribal Trade Organization. He joined us from Ottawa, Canada. Wayne, thanks a lot for your time.
Thank you.